they tell no lie.
Richard Hawley, tonight, the streets are ours. Excellent stuff. Peter Kerr is online at present, but a reminder, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren 107.3 FM. We have in the studio Steve Court. Hello, Steve.
Hello.
We have Katie Grimerson. Hello, Katie.
Hello.
We have the amazingly talented Randy Reinhardt. How are you, Randy?
Hi.
We have the equally amazingly talented and somehow always choreographed to perfection, Rosie Langhorne. How are you, Rosie?
I'm fine, thank you.
And we have the wonderful, superlative creator of Caitlin O'Shaughnessy and more, the fabulous Jean Bruce Scott. How are you, Jean?
I'm fantastic.
Ed Wellman has gone out for a bit of oxygen. It's all right, it's understandable. Peter, if you're ready and you've caught this show so far, you might have wondered what, as one of the Lincoln-inspired patrons, the jingle for the Lincoln-inspired festival this year, 7th to the 12th of May, is all about. Would you like to hear it again?
Yes, I would.
Lincoln-inspired is more than just an arts festival, more than a literary festival, more than a whole set of lifestyle opportunities, and more than what the world has needed for millennia. To see just how much more Lincoln Inspired can make you, go to lincolninspired.co.uk and explore the inspiration.
I thought the way Jean captured the British accent when she actually did that run just frankly astounding. You know, Dick Van Dyke, eat your heart out. We're just doing where we're going on that. It's true. So, are you happy with that, Peter, as one of the inspirational patrons behind Lincoln Inspired?
Well, yeah, I think it sums the whole thing up nicely, doesn't it? It's and, you know, joking apart, it's a fantastic achievement that Sarah Brulmore and her chums have pulled off in just a year, isn't it?
Well, we like to think so, don't we, Steve, really?
I think we've done a very good job.
You know, we like to feel that we are Sarah Bullimore's chums, you know? We did actually co-host a literary quiz, which we feel sort of added to the whole quality of the whole system. Sarah will be joining us hopefully later on. Rosie, a number between 1 and 400, please.
378.
378. Well, we're going straight to that for our little mini sight reading test from that perspective. He's obviously gone right to the end of the Song of the Eight Winds here, so it's going to hopefully no spoilers from this perspective, but see how things manifest from this point of view. Meanwhile, Salima was urging Lucky the Donkey on with little clicks of her tongue, her impatience to see her parents again becoming more difficult to contain the nearer she got to home. Sensing this, Neddy ran ahead, barking excitedly. When Pedrito and the panting, wheezing Tranquilla caught up with them, Salima was standing just over the brow of the ridge, staring down into a ribbon of land enclosed by the curved flanks of the hill rising up steeply on the far side. It was indeed a fine, sheltered place for grazing sheep, and fertile too, judging by the lush green sward growing between random strands of almond and olive and carob. In the centre of the valley, a whitewashed house nestled cosily amid a huddle of small barns and livestock enclosures. As was the custom in rural Mallorca, two tall palms stood guard at the entrance to this simple farmstead. It reminded Pedrito of his own home, and he could understand now why Salima had waxed lyrical so often about this entrancing place. Why, then, was she standing here looking so perplexed? Surely, Pedrito said, this was the moment she had been dreaming of for so long. So why wasn't she rushing down there to give her parents the most pleasant surprise of their lives? It's the smoke from the chimney, Sabrina replied uneasily. Pedro looked towards the house. But there isn't any smoke. Exactly. No sheep either. Well, it's been a warm day, so maybe they haven't bothered lighting the fire. Pedrito was trying to put as positive a slant as he could on the situation. And as for the sheep, well, maybe your father's grazing them further up the hill somewhere. But Sabrina was far from persuaded. She shook her head. No, it gets really cold at night up here at this time of year. Mother would have lit the fire hours ago. Does that kind of capture the piece, Peter, to a certain extent?
Yeah, you know, it's like the last time you read one of these pages, Alex. I think I'm going to have to have you roped in to do the audio version of this book.
Well, as a special treat, I'm going to actually present Rosie with this Song of the Eight Winds to actually take away and read in full, because I think it's a classic 10 out of 10 scenario. And it gets even better because also because I wanted to introduce the team gradually to the work of Peter Kerr, and obviously, well, I need to obviously purchase some more copies from this point of view because they are so dedicated. I thought we'd start off Randy and Jean with Snowball Oranges, One Majorcan Winter. So there we are, your very own Peter Kerr book that's sort of there to take across the Atlantic. Are you happy with that, Peter? So we're spreading the book word here from your point of view.
Alex, you know that the 10% is on its way to you.
You know, because I like to think like a living, breathing delight that even though, you know, Randy and Jean might not be able to be part of the Lincoln Inspired Festival this year, they can at least take away the whole thing. So let's go to Snowball Oranges first, and we'll return to Song of the Eight Winds, which of course, as I said, the historical epic, which I was outstanding. Equally found from a totally different angle, Snowball Oranges, equally as outstanding. Would you like to explain to Jean and Randy what they're going to be reading as they're perusing this as they cross the Atlantic and so on?
Yeah, well, Snowball Oranges is a true account. It's the first of I think five books that I wrote about my and my family's experiences while trying to grow oranges for a living on a little farm in the mountains of Mallorca. And I'm sure that Gene and Randy know where Mallorca is, even if they don't know where.
I'm going to say, even if they're Americans. No.
Yes, I thought I was going to say that.
Let's just test this. Gene Bruce Scott, Mallorca.
Spain.
Nice, yes.
Yes. 10 out of 10. Yeah. Yeah. But don't ask me to find it on the globe.
Well, could we ask you to find the United States on the globe, though?
No problem.
Mm. No. Okay.
There may even be somewhere in the States called Mallorca, I don't know. But anyway, we went to the Spanish one, having farmed a bit in East Lothian here in Scotland and squeezed out by the recession of the early 80s. And we found ourselves really on an impulse in Mallorca, buying a little rundown orange farm in the mountains. And we just got stuck into it with our two sons. One was 10, the other one was about 18 or something at the time. And we knew nothing about oranges at all, and barely spoke any Spanish. And the adventures and misadventures started the day we arrived, when it actually snowed in Mallorca, first time in living memory, I think, as if the weather had come from Scotland to welcome us. And we had great fun. We were there for 3 years, and these five books are an account, a true account, but a light-hearted one, of the ups and downs of our times in Mallorca, and Snowball Oranges is the first one. Hope you enjoy it.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it.
Now, we're looking at the Peter Kerr official website of obviously the best-selling Scottish author, and as frequently said, you've had an epic life in your own routine. Born in the Moorish fishing village of Lossiemouth, since early childhood lived on and off in the agricultural county of East Lothian. You've been a music producer, you've been a top jazz musician, you've worked your way through that, you've been a farmer, you're now an ace writer, you're now, of course, a Lincoln-inspired patron and regular Scottish correspondent for the Midweek Drive. So let's just open Rosie, questions for Peter, because you've got to say his latest text there, Song of the Eight Winds.
What do you want me to do, Alex?
Just ask a few questions.
Yes, really? Okay. Suddenly thought you wanted me to read something.
No, speed reading, we're covering that next week.
Peter, hello.
Hi, Rosie.
Peter, why did you go to Spain in the first place? What drove you there?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, we had been sort of squeezed out of the farming business in Scotland because we were too small to be viable, really. And when you're worried about these things, as I was, how am I going to feed the wife and kids? Mm. What you do is you go off on holiday to Mallorca, don't you?
Yeah. And, so that was your inspiration from your holidays?
I went across with my wife and we got lost one day driving through the mountains. I was driving and guess who was map reading?
Pre-sat-nav.
Yeah, and no sat-nav then, no. Yeah. And we just stumbled upon this little farm in the mountains that was for sale, and we were shown about it by the woman who owned it didn't speak English, and we spoke very little Spanish, but somehow after half an hour we had agreed to buy the place, and that was it, and it was a completely life-changing experience for us, and one, as I say, which led to all sorts of adventures and misadventures and a series of five books.
And what were you farming when you were in Scotland?
In Scotland, we were growing barley.
Barley.
Yeah, malting barley for making whiskey and beer.
Yeah.
And
different to suddenly have oranges.
Well, yeah, totally different, yeah, because we had livestock in Scotland too.
Good flavour of the whiskey, I suppose.
Beef cattle. And well, the only livestock that we could have had in Mallorca would have been a pig, because these little farms then, that was in the mid-80s, each little farm always kept its own pig.
Yeah, see, it's really literally just like San Diego, isn't it, G? You know, I mean, it's that sort of just sort of oranges and all the rest of the bits and pieces there.
And pigs. We have pigs in the backyard with
our
chickens.
Everybody have a pig in San Diego, yeah, I'm sure they do in the back garden.
But they
did in New York even then. And it was just a completely different way of life. And although we had our troubles, and they're all explained in the books.
And it is a classic read. I won't spoil any spoilers, Gene, but I'll be amazed if when we connect with you again, you haven't thought this is an outstanding thing. So one tragedy, it's not really a Native American voice, so it's difficult to actually get it into production. But I'm sure we could do a Native American version of it, really.
But it's actually a very good, probably cautionary tale, because I keep telling Randy I want to move out into the country and avocado farm orange grove.
So you see. The universe has provided. Peter, you're probably far too young to remember the series Top of the Pops, but if you can remember that sort of setup, etc., do you remember Legs and Co?
Yeah, and in fact, I sort of predate all that stuff.
Predates, yes.
In the 1960s, I was a professional jazz musician in London.
Yep. Oh, wow!
And we used to do loads of tellies. Thank You Lucky Stars, I think probably came before Top of the Pops, isn't it? Do you remember that?
It's amazing.
What was it called?
Thank Your Lucky Stars.
Yes, that does ring a bell, yeah.
Well, there we are, you see. Anyway, that little noise, which isn't a flatulent jingle, despite the fact that it could be leading to 2 minutes of verbal whiplash, takes us to the news. So, Katie, last two questions for Peter Kerr, please.
Peter, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
It's been fantastic as usual, Katie, thanks.
And can we look forward to connect with you in the near future?
You bet.
Look after the tooth, Peter. I know it's going to be a tough day, but it will work out well in the end. And remember,
Peter
Kerr, a taste of Spain, 7 p.m, the Bowl 4 Tapas Bar. Plus, of course, if you're a woman in rural enterprise, Lincoln Wire, Monday, May the 13th, that's at the Epic Centre. And Peter, we look forward to welcoming you to Lincoln Inspired.
Thanks very much, Alex. Look forward to that myself.
This is Jane Clark, the historian at Aintree Racecourse, and you're listening to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition with Alex Lefchuk.
Yeah, strangely so, how that sort of just decides to actually just have a slight delay there. Anyway, welcome to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, and a weather check as far as the Lincoln is concerned. Steve hasn't realised the microphone's live, so don't worry if we get that thing sorted through. 6 degrees centigrade is the high, 4 degrees centigrade is the low. It's going to be cloudy later on today with rain and drizzle spreading northerly. Okay, so life continues in its own marvellous little way. And Rosie, I know your dancing routine is fantastic in every sense of the word. As I was saying yesterday, and indeed frequently said, if you want to have a 21st century equivalent to taking the ethos of Legs & Co and the quality that Legs & Co obviously brought to the world and the planet through so many of those wonderful routines, one thing you can add, horses.
Oh,
horses
no.
And gymnastics.
No, Alex, I'm afraid I haven't got a clue
about
the horsey world.
You may not. Rebecca Townsend does, and we welcome Rebecca Townsend, our very own Jive Pony equine gymnastics specialist. How are you, Rebecca?
I'm very well, thank you, Alex. Rosie, let me enlighten you. You need a horse.
Yep.
Thank you for that, Rebecca. That
critical.
Probably is what I need.
Yep. So we've identified that to start off with.
Many legs on a dance show, let's face it. And they've got an extra couple of pairs, so you can't go wrong.
Exactly. You know, it's critical. Why you didn't actually introduce horses into the Top of the Pop studio, I don't know. I mean, maybe it was some sort of health and safety thing. But, you know, most bizarre.
It sounds like it could
be. Most peculiar.
I think it's probably something to do with children and animals, isn't it? Something like that.
Yes, that sounds like...
Something works along those ways. But share with us, Rebecca, in terms of, we've obviously got Randy Reinholtz from Native American Voices. I mean, Randy, are you a keen rider and sort of horse coordinator?
I can stay on a horse. I'm not a particularly good rider.
So much like myself, really. I can stay on it, but, you know, pretty much it, really, for the whole setup. But because last week, Rebecca was keen to actually get me to do some equine gymnastics.
No, I'm still keen. I'm still keen this week.
Yeah, well, you see, I've told you, I'm not going to do the tutu routine, because that's just, you know, people...
I think, Alex, you're using the tutu as an excuse.
You think so?
You know, you don't have to wear the tutu. We can put you in some lycra. I think I can see this happening. A nice lycra cat suit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think
who knows what could happen when we connect at the CLA Game Fair in Warwick Castle, but it could be almost as exciting as going down an outdoor cave at the Yorkshire Game Fair. Never mind. Jean, horse riding and such like. What do you think about horse winter equine gymnastics now?
I'm embarrassed to say that the one time I had to ride a horse on Airwolf, they gave me lessons.
Yes.
Learn as much as I could.
Yes.
And they ended up putting me on the top of a ladder.
No.
And filming all of my things on top of a ladder.
They put Caitlin O'Shaughnessy.
Yes. So I had to pretend to be riding a horse on the top of a ladder.
That's Gangnam style. that is Gangnam style, 20 years before. It's phenomenal.
That's fantastic. You must have needed a jaunty camera angle to get the realism into that.
Yes, exactly right. And I had a great stunt woman who did all my tricks. I was supposed to be a trick rider. So
the thing is with vaulting, Jean, is you have a great big pad and you have a lovely pair of handles, and usually the horse is being controlled by somebody else, so it's a lot easier.
Very good. Yeah. I could do that, maybe.
Yeah, it's just when you start going upside down, things get complicated.
Rebecca, you don't just do it upside down. You do it with microphone in hand. You do full commentary, etc. It is a tour de force. Ed, you're still impressed by the videos, are you not?
Certainly am.
Yes. Yeah.
Morning, Rebecca.
So let's move this further forward, Rosie. Let's talk about it, because obviously we need. I feel that after having conquered your fear of terriers earlier in the show.
I have been on a horse, actually, Rebecca. I am fibbing slightly.
Oh, oh.
And I've been trekking.
Yeah, well,
so that was very enjoyable. Yeah, exactly. But I don't really understand the sort of the whole horse box, and everybody arrives at a festival of horses and they're jumping and it's just... Right, I mean, it must be exciting to be part of, but I just never have been part of anything like that.
But the thing is, Rosie, I'm not actually a very horsey person, not in the traditional sense, because I ran away and joined the circus as an equestrian. So I was in the circus for 3 years, and I'm actually not that horsey. I just really, really like them.
Yes.
So I don't have all the gear, but...
But you see, that's the reason, Becky, why you're a regular on the Midweek Drive, because we can't be doing with all that time and all the rest of the sort of bits. There's a horse, and they're wonderful in their own routine, but, we need to have that balance.
I completely agree. And the bit that really fascinates me about my job, because I'm one of those lucky people that, gets to do a job that I love the training of the horses, because it's really about the communication with a different species. So, for example, all of our horses, they sit down, they lie down, they catch things, they count. And that's the funny thing. That's what people really like to see in our show. Yes, they like all the bouncing on and off and the acrobatics and the upside down. But what they really like is when we say something to the horse and the horse understands us. So that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
So many casting directors, when you're working for Native American voices, think, look, are you a horse? I'd have better sense with that if I was trying to say, what's it going to do? We haven't mentioned, of course, Rebecca, that Jean and Randy have come to us from California, where they had a sensational success with The Birdhouse. So, Randy, as you talk, you were acting in The Birdhouse, produced, of course, by Jean Bruce Scott. Just share with us, what was The Birdhouse all about, keeping the animal theme going?
Birdhouse had no horses, but we were in Texas. And it was a small town that was falling apart, disintegrating, being co-opted by big business. And the people in our play were incapable of adjusting or dealing with the change. They wanted things to stay the same, and of course they didn't. So it didn't end well.
Change the natural routine. But I'm thinking here...
Texans are quite like that, though, aren't they? Oh, no, that's a very big generalization. I work in Disneyland as well, in the Wild West show, where they try and keep everything incredibly real. And we've got some wonderful Texan cowboys there. But for example, one of my best friends in the show, who sometimes plays Buffalo Bill, he's a Texan. He's lived in France for 20 years, and he still doesn't speak French, which I completely rib him about all the time. Maybe Texans are slightly inflexible. I'm beginning to get this vibe.
I suppose y'all come back now. It's not necessarily translate too much from the body. But I'm thinking, actually, Gene and Randy, that, surely what California needs is Jive Pony, more Jive Pony, to actually get over there and actually perform. I mean, I think
Jive Pony sounds fantastic. I would love to get it to California.
Yep. So there we are. You see, this is where it starts. You see, the global domination of the Midweek Drive Morning Edition and Midweek Drive, of course, and Jive Pony. What questions have you got, Rebecca?
Peter Kerr was going to have to put your commission in the post. I think I am too, aren't I?
I just think there's a way in which you can get things together, and Rosie, don't think you're escaping, because I think those dance routines, the one you came up with last night, is the definite line in that clip.
Oh, I thought there was a catch.
Yeah. Steve will be up in all sorts of ways. Rebecca, any questions you want to ask the team at this stage?
I don't think so. I think I'm all right.
Oh, all right then. Steve, questions for Rebecca, because I don't think you've had some you've done much equine gymnastics in your career.
No, I've got to say, I'm actually really amazed, having heard some of the stuff you just said you can get horses to do, but does it not concern you that if horses were to develop thumbs and you've taught them to do all these wonderful things, that they could in actual fact take over the world and we could be forced to be ridden by horses?
Planet of the equines.
Planet of the
well,
equines.
I don't think that would be... Well, would it be... Actually, no, that would be quite a bad thing, being ridden by equines. I don't think that's going to happen.
Or would they, with opposable thumbs, spend all their time on Facebook and social networking sites? Just literally, you know...
That's true.
You know, you joke. I know they do have hooves, but they have something halfway up their legs, which is a leftover from a kind of thumb when they were sort of... I don't know, I guess when they had more claw-like things. And it's called a chestnut. And not many people know about it, and not many non-horsey people know about it. But if you look halfway up a horse's leg on the inside, they have something called a chestnut, and that was their leftover thumb. So
are you telling me that my deep-rooted fear that horses could develop thumbs is actually halfway into existence already?
The thing is, careful what you wish for. Careful what you wish for.
Now I can't sleep again.
Alternatively, they may be the next stage in evolution. You see, just
absolutely.
As dolphins, obviously far more intelligent than human beings, you know, and as Rosie and myself will attest to, what we were saying yesterday, Skippy the bush kangaroo. You know?
Exactly.
Skippy, our friend ever true. Yes. Did Skippy ever make it to America, by the way? I mean, obviously he wouldn't for animal quarantine,
Australian
right?
TV. I'm familiar with the show, but it didn't come to America.
It didn't come to us, so probably just as well, really. Yes. Ed, any thoughts from yourself?
Only to expand on the definition of horsey and non-horsey.
Ah,
and
yes.
Very horsey.
Very good.
And I also need to apologise to Rosie, because yesterday evening I accused you of being very southern.
Very southern.
Didn't I?
Yeah.
Which is meant to be a compliment.
Wow, she was so southern, she was down with, but she was saying, what can I say here? It was so southern.
It's the
southern.
Texan in me, is it?
Sure enough. Anyway, carry on, Ed. You've made that public apology, sir.
I think that was it. I think I'm finished now.
The difference between horsey and non-horsey.
Yes,
the difference between horsey and non-horsey, or
and
Texas
very
south,
horsey.
North and south. Exactly. Splendid stuff. What does the rest of the day have in store for yourself, Rebecca?
Me? Well, I am going to Heathrop Zoological Park today to learn a little bit more about zebra training. Hopefully I'm going to see the giraffes and everything. There's a wonderful place. It's about 3 miles from where I'm based, and the guy that runs it is called Jim Club, and he does all sorts of exotic animals. I mean, he has polar bears in the Cotswolds. Can you believe
good.
This?
It's like an episode of Lost in the middle of Gloucestershire. It's fantastic. It's a polar bear. No, it's black smoke. Where am I? Oh, well, never mind.
But I think he's working on an advertisement at the moment for a well-known Swiss chocolate company.
Yep.
And he's got to teach some cows to dance, so that's going to be fun. So
always
we're going to go and have a look at that today.
Dancing cows is the next line,
oh,
I feel.
We'll leave it there, I think. Cut.
It's something to actually work through and cogitate on as the world proceeds. Okay, we'll be doing a mini photo shoot in the studio very shortly. Rebecca, I think I'll ask Jean to throw those last two questions at you.
Have you had a reasonably fine, interesting telephonic time today?
Genius.
I have, and Jean, can I just say, it's such a pleasure to talk to you, who actually was on Airwolf. Favorite program, yeah. It really was.
Thank you so much, and please forgive me for writing the letter.
I
take it, Becky, you actually caught Airwolf then, did you?
Yes.
Yeah, nice.
It was one of my young program days. I absolutely adored it. It was adventurous. It had a helicopter and everything.
We seem to get it, I think, on Saturday afternoons, really.
Saturday,
but, I mean,
Saturday
you know.
Afternoon classic.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at Desperate Monday at present now, in which Caitlin attends her sorority's reunion, but instead of walking down memory lane, she finds herself fleeing from cold-blooded kidnappers. How true those words are even today, really. You know, you carry on in every sense of the word, but you still maintain good links with the cast and the team, I gather.
Yes, one of my kidnappers was Bryan Cranston from Breaking Bad, and we're still great pals. And one of the girls, Robin Dearden, was one of my sorority sisters, and she married him.
Exactly. In fact, as I'm sure Becky, you'll agree, the only thing that's a little bit sad about Airwolf is we didn't have enough Caitlin O'Shaughnessy. You know, 44 shows, not enough. And even the show, you know, sometimes you just thought, where are we going here? But superlative titles, nevertheless. Weather, of course. I mean, actually, I might put a challenge.
Is it on now, Alex? Well, has it been
repeated? It's always on, and you can always purchase these DVDs and watch them on that old Magnum PI, etc. You know, the theme, as I know you're working on the dance routine, is coming in the background. But I'm thinking, actually, Rebecca, would you be up for actually maybe doing a choreographed theme to Airwolf for Randy G? We could maybe get that set out, because we haven't even spoken about your Zonkies, the Zorsas.
This is why I love the midweek drive, because it gives me inspiration. And when I finish at the Zoological Park, I will be right back and do a choreographed dance with horses, perhaps a zonkey or two, to the Airwolf theme.
I think it's okay.
Classic.
Yeah, that's rising to the challenge and kicking ass, my girl. Genius. So I take it you will be back. So there we are. Second question asked. Keep on keeping on, Rebecca Townsend. We salute you. Take care now.
Brilliant, guys. Have a great day. Bye bye.
Mint is on the phone, Alex.
And she doesn't have to get up in the morning with her hair so soft and low. Delay.
There was so much excitement there. You may well have actually heard Rosie saying those words. Minty is on the phone for you. Yes, that's fine. That's because, again, the studio discipline was such that you hadn't realised microphones were actually... She doesn't realise now, but she, honestly, it's like this when we're in Dulwich. It's amazing. You know, it's like, unless there's an assistant stage manager saying, Mike's live! It's all right, I'll open up your channels now. It's Daylight, Katie and Gordon Lightfoot talking about TV producers and such like and journalists and so on. We welcome Ian Lennox to the show now. Ian, how are you? How's Newcastle? And why should Randy and Jean make sure that when they're heading up to Edinburgh, they also make sure they check out the joys of Newcastle on Tyne as well?
Well, they should certainly try and get St James's Park tonight, because there'll be quite a few people there shouting.
Yeah, they won't be going to see soccer. It's not going to happen on that sort of basis. But I can tell you're very excited by that. Ian, writer, producer, had a whole wealth of things, regular correspondent to the Midweek Drive and various other factors, etc. We have a critical thing to work through, because as you know, when we have visitors from the States over, I like to keep spreading that Ian Lennox word. So, I have in my right-hand side a copy of The 60s Man, a thriller set on Tyneside by Ian Lennox. Kel Adams was bright and good-looking, made for the 60s, but he was bored, and he met a film star, a terrorist, and the tough guy of Newcastle, and suddenly he was surrounded by murder and mayhem. And in my left-hand side, I have The Brothers. 1914, two young brothers from a remote Northumberland village stood at the threshold of their lives. Then came the war, and nothing would be the same again. What do you think should go to Randy, and what do you think should go to Gene? The Brothers or The 60s Man? Who should go to whom? I mean, I don't know. We've got, obviously, Gene Bruce. I mean, Gene, Airwolf, top actress, Magnum PI, St. Elsewhere. You know, share a little potted biography of yourself, really, for Ian's sort of benefit at this stage, and the listener.
Well, I was on Days of Our Lives, which was a soap in the United States for a few years. Went on to do Magnum PI. It was Lieutenant Commander Maggie Poole.
The legend, Maggie Poole.
The legend.
In at the start, in at the end.
There you go.
Genius.
Absolutely. Then I was on a show called Airwolf, which was by the same producer, Don Belisario. Oh. Flew airplanes and helicopters and such like that. And then I was the girl of the week on many, many, many episodic shows.
Yeah. Knight Rider and so on. I was fascinated in terms of your first experience of being part of the Midweek Drive telephonic experience, and I hadn't realised it was as traumatic for you as you sort of. So share with us, what was this connection? Because, you know, how did you get, when you got with the call through from the agent and the lines for that, so they'd like to feature you on the Midweek Drive?
Well, I'm not very good talking, and so I get very nervous, and I'm very nervous today in the studio, but Alex is helping me along here. It helps to be on the phone when I can't see everybody, but it's been very good for me talking to people out and about. So
I think you are. Of course, the invoice for that therapy will actually be in the post too, but it's all good stuff. classic line there. And Randy, over to yourself, because I do appreciate, in fact, that you are somebody who will go from your American football onwards, really, but share with us your own acting career, because this is crucial to Ian deciding who he's going to donate, who's he going to provide the books for, you know. Carry on.
Country boy, part idiot, part athlete.
Professor at San Diego.
Now I'm a professor.
Amazing.
Who thought he'd be an intellectual. But I play one on TV.
And, of course, co-founder of Native American Voices.
He's a classically trained actor who worked at the Old Globe for 2.5 years, so he's got quite the background.
Exactly. So there we are. So there's your brief bios. Ian, who should have the 60s men to take back across the pond? Who should have the brothers?
I think, is it Randy?
Yeah.
Yes.
He sounds... academically based,
yes.
So you might be more interested in the brothers because it is about the life in almost historic times of the First World War, and
which leads.
Actually, can I tell you a little anecdote about that? One of my friends went to Zurich and staying in a hotel, and the lady who's acting as the maid on a temporary job, I think. Saw a copy of The Brothers lying on her bed and said, "Oh, I was asked to read that one as a student in Birmingham, I think it was." So she gave her the book. So yes, I think, and also the other lady whose name I can't remember. I'm sorry.
Jean Bruce Scott.
Sorry, Jean.
Well, three names. Don't use them all. That's exciting.
Oh no, I'm terrible on names. Sorry, I apologise. As a 60s man deals with the problems of being famous. One of subplots to it. Mm. I think this film star, at some stage, says, "I thought being famous was one of the rewards. I found it was one of the prices."
Part of the deal, of course, is that Randy and Jean will need to give full sort of feedback to you to this.
No.
Book report required.
Just read the flyleaf and bullshit from there.
I sense a seminar, some notes coming through, a little bit of discourse coming through on that basis, and they all work well. Rosie obviously will work through that for the Peter Kerr routine. Splendid. Okay, Ian, any questions you'd like to put to the team? Because we're back all in the studio again. We have Steve Court, Katie Grimason, Randy Reinholtz, Rosie Langhorne. Do you remember Legs & Co, Ian Lennox? Do you remember Legs & Co?
Are they a dance troupe?
Nice. Yes. Do you remember guys?
Did they follow Pan's People in England?
Yes. Yeah. Well done.
Right. I think I was.
They were on Top of the Pops.
Oh right, yes. I used to go over there. I think I was.
Which one did you used to go out with, Pete?
I'm not going to.
Hang on a minute, Ian Lennox. Ian, it's Rosie. 36 years ago, do you remember?
No. One of the Pan's people.
Did you?
Yeah.
Because Ruth in Pan's People.
She said I was the worst dancer she's ever met.
Nice. Oh. Very good. That's always good. It's been bonding. Oh, on
I
that
probably
basis.
Was actually. I was terrible.
Seriously.
I used to be enthusiastic, but it was like when I danced at nightclubs, it was like a bit like a karate class.
Well, it's expressing yourself, so that's all good for
that.
Yeah, very good. Yes.
Mayhem on a crowded dance floor, though.
Wow.
dangerous.
There's one girl said to me once, "I didn't know you could dance." I said, "Are you drunk?"
And that, Gene, is what you call Tyneside humour, because Ian is what is referred to in British parlance as a Geordie. Which means he talks in. He was. He's lots the
joke.
It was evolving, but then it kind of died halfway through. It was like nature decided, no, you can't just don't go there when you've got a Newcastle man doing his whole routine in his whole sort of thing. What's authentic? Learn yourself, Geordie Pet. Let's talk our way through this, because as we work through this, Randy might want to sort of just break into some Geordie vernacular. What as they're heading northwards?
I used to work in Manchester, and yes. My party piece was to. Oh, hurry, hurry, come on, yeah.
Right, excellent. this ties in with a tale that Rosie's going to regale us with in a few moments. But
what I say to English is, Harold, would you mind passing your hammer to me?
So let's break it down, because it'd be good for Gene for a bit of accent here. So the original line was, Ian.
Hoi, 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 hammer, hoi, here.
Hoi, 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 hammer, hoi, here.
Nice.
Native American voice.
it's a bit like that was a Polish, there's not a consonant in sight.
Yeah, well, we'd love the Polish, as you know.
All vowels instead of all.
It's genius. I think that's worked splendidly. Randy, do you want to try a bit of Geordie for us?
Fantastic.
That's remarkable.
It is. It's quite literally, you know, I feel
but
as though...
I've never tried it. You've got loose false teeth.
We just work into a whole routine. Well, I do realise that's been just... Steve, anything you'd like to add to Ian at this stage?
I'm just loving it. I just want to hear it one more time.
Yeah, one more. I tell you like this. Not that I want to sort of build up too much, but you love Rosie's tale about her Facebook routine. That's even better, but carry on. Carry on.
Do you want me to say how
yes.
you...
Yes.
How you, yeah.
It's brilliant. Just brilliant.
That was a Japanese version.
I was going to say, what was amazing is you say it and you can tell that it's a Geordie saying yeah. it. You said it then twice as fast and it becomes Japanese. And when you get an American person say it, it does sound like a Native American kind of, you could imagine dancing around a campfire. It's brilliant. It's a multilingual. It's fantastic.
I think it's all go off the United Nations.
All the way around the world now, there are people passing hammers left, right and centre.
Katie, last two questions.
My cat's staring at me. Here.
Oh, we don't want another Minty moment, do we? We don't want a Terrier moment.
No, or indeed a Fuzz Aldrin moment. But anyway, let's move on. Katie, last two questions for Ian Lennox, please.
Ian, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Oh, yes. Last week, Geordie, it's great.
And can we look forward to connecting with you in the near future?
You certainly can, yes.
That's splendid, then. Coming up next, all well, we should be saying hello to William Sitwell. Round of applause for Ian Lennox, please.
Yay! Thank you.
In gourmet criticism and foodie delights, and the author of A History of Food in 100 Recipes. Quite clearly a question of quality personified. It's William Sitwell on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Yes, so there we are, William. The lady to whom you actually said, give that woman her own show, is all right for all the stuff there. Just keeping people praised there in case they were wondering what was happening with the terriers. How are you, William?
So she didn't... keel over or anything?
No. It's all very positive in the whole system. Now, whilst William, you probably, I don't know, do you remember the wonderful world of Top of the Pops?
Of course I do. Of course I do. I grew up with. Listen, yeah, I'm a child of Thatcher.
Oh wow! Well,
I'm a child, not the child. and I grew up in that era of great of Top of the Pops and Mrs. Thatcher. And in fact, I went to the Commons yesterday to listen for 2.5 hours of some of the tributes to Thatcher, to Glenda Jackson's wonderful intervention, should we put it that way, and listened to some very fine speeches. And there was no mention of Top of the Pops, which of course was one of the key achievements of the Thatcher era.
So if I say Legs & Co. and Rosie from Legs & Co., does that carry with it lots of wonderful, happy televisual memories for you, William?
Look, every show has its downside. I'm glad of the innovation of the music video managed to protect us from Legs & Co.
Rosie, on that point,
I'm wounded.
Exactly. Let's move on to share with William. Apart from we talk about your culinary expertise, because you visited the Jamie Oliver restaurant, did you not?
Oh, I did. Yes, it was my birthday on Monday, and my husband and my daughter and I, we live in very near Brighton, and so we visited Jamie Oliver's restaurant, which I was pleasantly. It was very, very good.
So, in your viewpoint, William, is it up with with Heston Blumenthal and various other folk, etc.? Would you say, well, he does all right for a kind of blokey bloke?
Well, I don't think you can't really compare the cuisines and the styles of food that they're doing. I mean, I think Jamie's Italian is a good concept. You know, cheap, and maybe not so cheap, but you know, he's managed to roll out a very decent Italian offering across the country, and I think he's making of money out of it. No reservations policy, I think, which I find slightly tarsome.
I know, William, you're concerned after the Pippa Middleton affair not to make too many comments that's going to end up on the national press, so we can...
I think I can say whatever I like as long as it's not about Pippa.
But it's your fault anyway.
And now you say that. You know, I mean, just to sort of say, I mean, Ed, what is he referring to? For the benefit of Gene and Randy here, would you like to just talk us through what happened and why William Sidwell and this show ended up in the national papers? And William in particular was the victim of abuse in cyberspace.
All because William made a decision that hits quite within his job description to make. A little bit of change, bringing somebody new on board, and all of that. And we were saying how this provoked a really very unpleasant backlash of horrible people using social media to say things that they would never have had the confidence to say had they been face-to-face with
them.
And that was one of them.
That was one of them.
Was that William swearing?
No, it's perfectly understandable. But talking social media, we have to point out that, Ed, you also had a look at Waitrose magazine. I've showed you that. I said, this is very good, isn't it? And you said, it is.
Yeah, can I mention the price?
Yes.
£1.20, fantastic value. You want to get hold of a copy of this. And, I mean, I'm no cook.
I thought it was £1.50, actually, but never mind. William, what's the price of it's a wonderful thing.
You
can't put a cost on the joy and delight that gave us on the journey to Harlexton on Monday.
I was reading it, you were driving.
Exactly. Rosie, your social networking media story, please, because this is the tale of, we're talking about accents, William, and I think you'll appreciate this from social media perspective. Share with us as a young mum and sort of keeping trendy with what you were doing in Brighton and your response.
I have a 16-year-old daughter, and there is a little trendy clothesline called Hollister, and there is a Hollister shop in Brighton. And it was my daughter's birthday, and I thought I'd buy her a T-shirt or some jeans or something from Hollister because all her friends were wearing this particular label. And I went down to the shop, and it is very trendy, and it's very dark. You can hardly see anything. And so you have these sort of, it's fairly, you know, sort of middle class, middle England, and you're going in, they've got all these mums who are looking in the dark at the price of a T-shirt that's probably about £85 and a pair of jeans that are about £150.
So $500,
though. You know. And anyway, I queued up and wanted to pay, and I put my card to pay and my PIN number in, which
stay with us, William. It does have a wonderful climax.
And then the girl behind the counter just said, "Oh, may I tell you look us up on Facebook?" I said, I'm terribly sorry, pardon. She said, "Oh, may I tell you look us up on Facebook?" And I said, sorry, I'm going to have to say that again. I'm really sorry. I can't see you because it's so dark and I can't hear you. Mm. And she just said, well, make sure you look us up on Facebook. Mm. And I thought, well, why would I do that?
Have you ever been invited to Facebook on that level, William? Because, I mean, obviously, we are Facebook buddies. Is that something which resonates, or you just think, this is outrageous?
Well, you know, I remember when your particular request for friendship came along, and it was put me in a very awkward social dilemma. You know, obviously, my instinct is to ignore.
Yeah,
but
I know.
I thought that might rather cast a rather dark cloud over the mid-morning live thingy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the show. Mm, yeah, so there we are. Big bonded, etc.
So I think I decided to accept. But I do get sort of, I don't know, hundreds of requests for friendships, and I ignore them, and then occasionally I sort of think I'll accept every single one of them, and which is probably a mistake. I mean, I regard Facebook as a sort of friendly arena of social media, and then whereas Twitter is the more hostile. So I feel I can sort of I'm feeling Facebook. I'm among friends. I'm sure that's completely the wrong judgment to make there.
Fascinating. And for the benefit of Randy Reinholtz and Jean Bruce Scott, who are making their way around the country and going up to Scotland as well, what sort of cuisine should they be checking out? In fact, I'll take this further. Jean, would you invite William over to California to maybe lend his gastronomic genius to sort of the Californian food experience?
Absolutely. Why not?
Oh. Well, I'm coming to California in June because my book, History of Food, is being published by Little Brown in America in June. So I'm touring. I'll be in San Francisco in the middle of June. So, ask Alex how you can become a social media friend of mine and we'll work it out.
Any friend of Alex's is a friend of yours, right?
Yeah. Well, he didn't respond to that, obviously.
I do have a question for William, though. Since we're headed to Edinburgh, can you give us a recommendation for a restaurant that we should check out?
In Edinburgh?
Yes.
Off air.
Oh dear.
There you go.
Okay.
We'll deal with that. Yeah, exactly. No, I think it shows a balance.
Dine on the train, okay?
Okay.
take your own haggis. Anyway, if you bring your own sheep. Anyway, other exciting things, we'll work our way through that. Anything else you'd like to raise, William, with the team? Because as I say, we have a fantastic hextet of fine folk in the studio at present.
Well, I tell you, if your folk are bored of the village of Lincoln come Friday, go up to Scarborough, because I'll be appearing in the Scarborough Literary Festival. I'm doing two talks, one about the history of food and another about the Sitwells, who are well known in Scarborough.
You see, already you've raised the reason, hasn't he, basically, Steve, as to why he should be an essential part of Lincoln Inspired 2014?
Yes, he has.
Yeah, sort of put that whole thing through then, and we'll work through that whole thing.
We'll see Scarborough as like a warm up to next year's Lincoln Inspired.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to think that's sort of working through that. So, Randy, would you like to throw those last two questions to William Sitwell before we obviously pass it over to Gene, and he can have an off air chat about life, the universe, and restaurants in Edinburgh? Randy, over to you.
William, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I think so, and I think it's precursor to the Lincoln Literary Festival, of which I am determined to be a centrepiece.
And then can we...
It was only Lord Melvin Bragg who effectively usurped you this time round, but don't worry, you know.
I walked past him in the street yesterday.
Unbelievable. You know,
should have taken him down.
The power of coincidence.
Page 13, Melvin Bragg, Grace and Mary, 7 p.m, Lincoln Drill Hall, and that sort of system. Just literally days before we actually do 50 Years of Doctor Who, Terence Dix, Graham Harper, Richard Franklin and a Dalek, which I'm hosting as well. And of course, today, don't forget, dear listener, you come along to the... MC1001 room, and Randy and Gene will be in conversation with myself, which is always nice. You know, it's always fun. Oh, happy I'm a Native American voices, etc. So the next question, of course, is what?
Can we look forward to connecting with you in soon?
I think the response to that is I'm going to give you an extended response to that. My grandfather had a housekeeper who worked with him for 70 years. On the third week of her employment, my grandmother wrote in her diary, gave Gertrude her notice, sad but inevitable. She was still there 70 years later. So my answer to that question is sad but inevitable.